Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, what do you got there?
This is the new Ping G430 Max 10K driver. It's next level, I'll tell you. It's so impressive. We all know that Ping help you play your best. I've been using them for years. I wouldn't use anything else. In fact, this new driver, it's Ping's straightest and highest moment of impact driver ever.
Holy moly. So on the course, what's that going to mean? How's it going to help golfers?
Well, to put it simply, it means people are going to be hitting longer, straighter, and they're going to absolutely crack their drives off the tee. I could talk about it all day. It's that good. But the best thing to do, if you want to check out how impressive Ping's new G430 Max 10K driver is, just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting, and I'll see you out there with my Ping gear.
Well, it's week 14 of the golfing year, and after an Easter weekend where we ate far too much chocolate and played far too much golf, is that possible? We're back for another big episode of Talk Birdie to Me. We're here thanks to the team at Ping. They'll help you play your best. You can see your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting. And a big thanks to the Golf Clearance Outlet. You'll find them in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, and online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Okay, time to stop chowing down on leftover Easter eggs. Another big show on the way. Here's Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
So, boys, I've got some information on the Australian Open. I'm waiting on one text, and I've just given him a hurry up, and I'll get that text reasonably shortly.
During the podcast, we'll get that text?
I'll see him a little hurry up in just a second. Because it is strange, isn't it, Nick? Because I think you made the point about five podcasts ago that the US Open just announced their 2050 site. It's some forward planning there, not so much with us just at the moment.
Yeah, spot on. You know, we're trying to figure out what's going on with the Aussie Open. I was wondering what you're talking about for a second there, to be honest, Mark. So,
I was wondering why there was a big delay. Now we'll make sure you leave that pause in, please. so we get it. Because I'm here at Australian Golf Headquarters. I just saw all the executives pile into the Peter Thompson room. Nick.
That looked like a power meeting.
It did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it did. And I had the door open. I saw him. I said to Damien DeBowen, who used to be at the A-League, and now he's come over to Greener Pastures at Golf Australia. I said, Damien, I'm about to talk about the Australian Open. What's going on? He goes, don't worry about a thing. We've got it under control. So that is taking place. Of course, we're here at Australian Golf Headquarters. And where are you? Bonnie Doone, just enjoying the castle.
Yeah, up near Eildon, 10 minutes from Cathedral. Just spend a bit of Easter, you know, a bit of time off up here. So all good, though.
I just went and got myself a coffee in the pro shop here at Sandy Golf. And I saw a golf club that was in my first set of clubs. Now, I reckon everybody remembers their first set of clubs. Now, I'm interested in what you get, because over in Perth, I can't imagine you had that much access to a good set of lefties.
Yeah, well, my first matching set, I can tell you what that is, because the first set I had was just a mixed bag of everything. I think I had seven clubs. None of them were the same. They all had different grips, shafts. Some were falling apart.
That's nice.
But my first matching set, were the PGF Aristocrats.
Wow. Remember those? Yeah, I had a set of Hallmarks there at one stage, and they were kind of, I think the Aristocrats might have come after the Hallmarks.
Yeah, the Aristocrats are a beautiful set of clubs. So I got the Persimmon driver and three-wood. I think I still got the driver at home, and I remember I took it out about a year or two ago for a hit, and my goodness, they are so hard to hit these days, the Persimmons. But the old Aristocrats were a nice blade, and probably too hard for me to use, you know, as a 10 or an 11-year-old when I first got them. But, I always remember those. They were shiny and brand new, and I loved them.
Yeah, I had a set of Persimmon V2s, and they were ladies' clubs. And what my parents did, they bought a full set of irons and two lots of wood. So I had a 2-wood and a 5-wood, and I had the 3, 5, 7, 9, and my brother had the 4, 6, 8, wedge.
Oh, nice.
I think I might have had the sand iron as well. So they made it affordable for them. And just the 2-wood and the 5-wood were great. And they got us a putter each, and it was a PGF putter. I remember that as well, and it wasn't a bad sort of putter. I remember it being quite decent.
Yeah, I reckon one of the most popular sets that when I was a trainee and when I used to work at a couple of public golf courses back in Perth were the old Brosnans. You remember them, Dennis Brosnan?
Oh yeah.
Gee, weren't they popular amongst the amateur golfers?
Yeah, Dennis is still playing our Legends Tour events. He actually came down to Victoria and played where we played, Port Arlington.
I thought I saw Dennis from afar, actually. I was going to say hello, but he took off in another direction. So it's been forever since I've seen him.
He's got to be 80-something, hasn't he?
Probably.
He's got to be 80-something years old.
Mm.
Hey, I want to ask you about Augusta. Now, we're almost there. It's an enormous week. And I saw the news last week, but I failed to bring it up. But, you know, they're always twisting and turning with their golf course. And in the summers, when the golf course is closed, that's when they make their changes. Now, it's been Google Earth or whatever these, you know, the crazies do. It hasn't quite been announced by Augusta yet, but they can see that the second hole at Augusta, the tee has moved back and to the left. And I imagine, Nick, now, I mean, I can only imagine because I've only stood behind that tee.
Yep.
But I imagine that means players, instead of being able to get their 3-wood out, you know, the really long ones, and turn the 3-wood easily, all of a sudden now they've got to turn the driver, perhaps. Do you think that's going to impact, or do you think it's got to a stage where they just hit it so far anyway, it won't really matter?
From what that sounds like, I mean, I haven't seen any of the plans, but the fairway bunker on the right-hand side, I think what they found with the longer hitters is they're now able to take it out of play with the driver. So I have a feeling what they're trying to get them to do is hit more of a right-to-left shape and then maybe bring that bunker more in play if they've moved it back, especially 10 or 15 yards. Mm. I'd say that's probably what they've done, so that they can't carry that right-hand bunker, and then all of a sudden you've got to hit a right-to-left shape off the tee if you want to get it down the hill more. The other option is to lay it short and back, and then it turns it into a 3-shot hole. So they're always thinking about these little things, the men at the Masters, and sounds like a good plan to me. It was always, to be honest, a 3-shot hole for me. Every now and then I was able to sneak one just past the bunker, and then it's such a hard shot off that downslope going into that green. But I think I might have – I never got it on the green in two. I think I might have got it into the greenside bunker in two on a couple of occasions, but – it was definitely downwind and firm when that happened.
So you were to play with a number of players who had the power to get there with a driver and an iron. And tell us about the difficulty of hitting that long iron or a hybrid or a 5-wood off that severe downslope as you go past the right-hand fairway trap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just such a tough shot because the downslope there on number two is so much more severe than what you can see on the TV. Like everything else at Augusta, I think everything is more severe than what it actually looks. So you know, trying to hit a 3-4 iron off that, and you need it coming in quite high if you want to stop it on the green. The other option is to thread it through the front portion there. But a lot of times, depending on the pin position, you're actually playing to get in one of those bunkers anyway, because it's almost an easier shot than leaving yourself a really long putt from certain spots on the green. So, it all depends on what sort of a pin position you have, the angle you have, and so on and so forth. I mean, even when the pin's on the right, far right-hand side, if you can put it right up into the face of that right-hand bunker, it's not too difficult to bunker shot from in there.
Or you could just do what Louis Oosthuizen did, you know, just hit a cut in, make it land on that front tongue, and let it curl around the corner and make a 2, just as simple as that.
Well, you could do that, yeah.
When I see a shot like that and how it gets to that back right-hand corner, in my mind, I imagine Jones and Dr. Alistair McKenzie thinking that that's a way to that corner. Do you get that impression when you see some of the shots that people have to play at some courses around the world?
Oh, for sure. I think you see that on a number of the Sandbelt courses as well in Melbourne, where to get to that pin, you have to hit a certain shape. And the guy who was best at it is Tiger Woods, who can work it both ways and move it into left-hand back pins or right-hand front pins or whatever the shot really called for. And you can see that certainly in the design and the way that they've shaped that second green, particularly even the next hole, the third green, when you're trying to get it into that left-hand pin, you've really got to hit some sort of a draw off the middle of the green and work it down the slope. So he was a genius, that fella.
And just while we're on Augusta, the last one, and shots you can't see the difficulty of just watching on the TV. This would have been right in your wheelhouse, I reckon. I know you've been, and you know, the 15th hole is probably the par five that it's the most easy for you to reach. But on the times where you didn't get there in two, tell us about hitting the lob wedge off that downslope across the pond to that tiny little slither of a green. What that shot was all about?
It is the hardest wedge shot in the world, that's for sure. And again, depending on the pin, like the one on the left-hand pin, you've got to come in from the right-hand side. If you're down the left, you've really only got about 7 or 8 paces to land it in two. And the one place you can't go, obviously, is short. You're in the water. But at the same time, you don't want to go long either, because then you can easily chip it back in the water. So if you can lay it up as far down the right-hand side as possible, all of a sudden you get angled to work it in off a slope which runs through the middle of that green. But playing off downhill lies, side hill lies, you just have to get used to it coming into Augusta. And that was really what I focused my practice on leading into those golf tournaments. I'd even, you know, find sides of driving ranges and things like that. I mean, we had the Houston Open last week, for example, where in previous years, Houston was always the week before the Masters. Now we've got the Texas Open the week before. But the beautiful thing they do at the Houston Open, I think, every year is they shave the golf course like it is Augusta. Yeah. Like you didn't see any rough, for instance. The greens are pretty slick. A lot of the runoffs around the greens are very, very similar, where you've got to hit these bump and runs or one hoppers, you know, that we saw Scotty Scheffler do at one stage. And it's great that the tour sets the course up that way for the guys, because it basically gets them ready. And I was very fortunate where I lived at Isleworth, because, you know, obviously Tiger lived there for many years. And one thing he always requested going into any major was he would want Isleworth playing very similar to the major that we had coming up. So for Augusta, for example, he would ask the ground staff to shave all the greens as quickly as possible, get all the surrounds going, you know, really, really fast. And then if US Open was coming up, we'd go, well, can you grow the rough up for me? You know, we want to make this as hard as possible. So it was great having that sort of preparation going into it.
Oh, Dan and I are sitting here with our mouths open that he had the ability to walk into the superintendent's shed and say, hey, listen, I'm playing the US Open this week. Can you grow that nice tight rough around the green 6 inches, please? I can't get over that, to tell you the truth. Well, that wouldn't happen in any other golf course anywhere in the world.
Yeah, it's the beauty of living in the US and golf clubs over there. They love tour pros. It might be a different story here in Australia, I think. But you know, when you have the world number one living at the golf course, well, what he wants, you're going to get, obviously, and they want to keep him happy. So we were just benefactors of all that, the other tour pros that live there.
Well, that's one former world number one, but there are two number ones in the world getting around at the moment that are just flying, aren't they?
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, I mean, Nelly and Scotty were going for 3 in a row, and Nelly got it done and Scotty unfortunately didn't, but he gave it a good shot. And the scary thing again with Scotty is he actually had a pretty ordinary putting week. He was about middle of the field, he was about average, and he still almost won. And, you know, he obviously missed that short putt on the last to get in the playoff, and by all accounts it didn't look like the best putt I've ever seen on a final hole. I know if it was Tiger Woods having that putt, it would have hit the back of the hole with some speed, whereas he was just trying to dive in the front. So, you know, he put it down afterwards to just a bit of a misread, and you got to go with what he says. But I think a little more speed would have been certainly. But then you look at Nelly. Oh, my goodness. From tee to green, she was in absolute cruise control on that Sunday. And you kind of had a feeling through the week, you know, she was sitting back in the pack a little bit. And she just put the foot down when needed, and it was almost mistake-free golf. It was just so impressive, and you can see the confidence oozing out of her. She's the first LPGA Tour player to win 3 in a row since 2016, so maybe 4 in a row is coming, and this week, funnily enough, it's the match play. So if she can win that one, that'll be very interesting, because as we know, match play, anyone can win.
Yeah. What happened to Hannah Green? you're unbelievable. What happened to Hannah Green, buddy? I mean, I saw her after 2 rounds. She shot the 61 in the second round. And then, you know, I've had a weekend where I didn't get to see too much golf. I've only been following the golf on social media. But she seemed to disappear off the leaderboard.
Yeah, Saturday was a tough day. Very wet, very, very windy on Saturday. And things just didn't go away. Her swing looked a little bit out of sorts. She, you know, hit a real rank pull into a water on a par 5, which everyone was birdieing. So it's just one of those days where she really struggled, ended up shooting over par, and then she was too far back on Sunday, and it actually, weirdly enough, it rained in the desert on Sunday. They got all sorts of weather on that weekend. But the other Mount Lawley member who was flying was Hira Naveed. I didn't realise she was a Mount Lawley member, to be honest, but she's a Perth girl, and she finished second. So what a result for her.
Holy moly, I didn't even know she was an Australian, to tell you the truth, Nick. I mean, I had a quick look at the leaderboard. I didn't see a flag next to her name. It was one of those leaderboards that didn't have the flags. That's amazing. Where's this young lady come from?
Yeah, again, she's sort of been playing Epsom Tour the last 4 years, and I've kept a bit of an eye on her. I knew she was from Perth, but I didn't realise she was from Mount Lawley as well, as what they were saying in social media circles. So she's been a bit in the Hannah Green shadow, and obviously, a contemporary of hers sort of coming through the same channels. But she went to, I think, Pepperdine University in the US, had a nice solid college career, had played Epsom Tour the last 4 years, and then got her card on the LPGA Q School before Christmas. And apparently her finishing second, she made more money in that second place finish, just over $200,000 US, than he had in 4 seasons on the Epsom Tour. So for a moment there, actually it looked like she had a chance of maybe even challenging Nelly. But the great thing for her is it wraps up her tour card for this season.
Oh, sensational. Oh, that's really, really good. Hey, my text message came through about 3 minutes ago.
Cool.
So I put to you at the start of our little chat here that the Australian Open still doesn't have a home. We are officially in April. The tournament is historically in November. Sometimes creeps into December, but, you know, it's not far away at all. I don't know about you, Nick. I've heard a little whisper here and there. I don't want to give away what course that I've heard, because it's always nice for Golf Australia to make that announcement about the courses. But I still don't really know anything about it. I don't know. I don't even know whether it's going to be in Victoria or New South Wales. I know it's not going to be in WA. That's what I've been told. Have you heard anything?
Absolutely nothing. So you know more than me, Mark.
Okay. So I saw, like I said at the start, I saw Damien DeBowen and a team of executives. They've just gone into the Peter Thompson room here at Golf Australia. And I just flat asked them. I said, what's going on with the Australian Open? And they just kind of nodded away and smiles and said, look, don't worry, everything's under control. So I'm sure it is. But anyway, before we got here, I sent a text message to somebody who may well know. And
this source you're here, this is not official news. This is some inside information you've
this
got.
This is just some insight into the negotiation stage of where we're at, Dan.
Gotcha.
So he's just texted back. I actually sent him a text message saying, is it at this place? And he said, no one knows. He goes on, New South Wales Gov offered $8 million but can't get two courses, because the way the Australian Open is being played these days, you need two courses for the males and the females.
Yep.
Victoria Government offered $3 million, but that's probably not enough money.
Yep.
It doesn't say that last sentence in the text message, but $3 million probably won't get the job done. So according to my source, it's impossible, isn't it? I mean, if New South Wales can't get two courses to commit to an Australian Open, you can't have the Australian Open in the format that it's currently at. And if they only get $3 million from the Victorian government, just three, I mean, the negotiations going on next door in the Peter Thompson room might be talking about that right now. But that's where we're at as far as, you know, someone reasonably close to the situation is talking about. So, if that's all true, I don't know what the next step's going to be for our best tournaments, because the men's and the women Australian Opens, it's a big deal in this country, and they should be.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's funny, we were talking about the New Zealand Open a little while ago, and we're trying to figure out how they got the prize money up so high. And funnily enough, when I was over there playing at Tara Edie, I was talking to a couple of guys about that, and they said, well, the reason they had the amateurs play is because that was a lot of the fun that they were playing, because they charge an arm and a leg, obviously, for the amateurs to play in the New Zealand Open. But that's how they were able to raise so much money for the guys to play for, which is very interesting, I found. And we spoke about should a National Open be played with amateurs and so on and so forth. So, I mean, that's their prerogative and their choice, and that's how the prize money up so much. Now, here, obviously, in Australia, we've got the interesting format of the men and the women playing the same tournament, or two different tournaments, but at the same time. And that's where I think the government's, you know, quite very, well, the government's very interested in funding that sort of a thing. Now, if we had two separate ones at separate dates or consecutive weeks, for example, I think that would be a good way to do it. But how do you fit that on the schedule? Would they be willing to put that sort of money up if we did it separately? Now, having them together, well, that's obviously the best case scenario. But as you mentioned, Mark, I think in New South Wales or Sydney, there's two courses that they just can't get together. Last year we had the Australian and the Lakes. I heard that they don't really want to do that again, those two courses. So then where else do you go? I mean, you have Royal Sydney, but I think they're under construction. New South Wales Golf Club, I don't think they're ever going to do it. But they're in a real conundrum right now. And then, you know, if they can get that big government money up a little more, well, then perhaps we do it somewhere here in Melbourne.
Well, I don't understand why the Vic government wouldn't up the money. I think $3 million versus $8 million, surely in terms of tourism impact, they would get more than that back and then some.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Victorian government's headed towards $250 billion in debt. So I imagine with a budget coming up reasonably soon, perhaps the Allen, you know, Jacinta Allen, who is the Victorian Premier, does want to be seen to be pumping up golf when they're in, you know, in a bit of turmoil.
Cost benefit analysis stuff. She can say, well, it's going to cost $8 million, but we're going to make 30.
Oh, I agree with that. I really do think that is right, especially if the Australian Open's run right. And I want to talk to you about, you know, New Zealand, the way they're doing it. I know it's the New Zealand Open, but if you, I just they're doing it the wrong way. You know, why wouldn't they try and make it a real championship? At a wonderful, you know, I'm not saying the golf course isn't wonderful, but a real championship at a golf course that would look magnificent on the TV, and they put that around the world with some of the big name players and do it properly. I don't know what's going on with the New Zealand government and New Zealand Golf to put their national title, and it's a pro-am. I don't understand that. And I think now the Australian Open, and look, I'm speaking before any kind of announcement, so, but this is just my opinion. They might nail it. There might be a big announcement next week. But I just think having the men and women play Australian Opens on the same golf courses, there are just too many headaches. It's actually as simple as that. It's one headache after another.
Yeah, it's been a tough one. I think trying to get everything in alignment. When it all comes together, I think the events work really well. Name players, you know, we've heard, you know, a couple of years ago from a couple of those guys that they weren't real happy with the format and, you know, the third round cut, the pace of play and things like that with the two fields. There's plenty to sort out, and I mean, personally, you know, I think it'd be fantastic to have 1 week the Australian Men's Open, the following week the Australian Women's Open at the same venue. I think that would be awesome. But I don't think it's going to work that way because, you know, the government and the funding is what it's all about, and having them play at the same time on the same golf course, well, then that's when bigger dollars come in. And unfortunately, well, fortunately, at the end of the day, money talks, doesn't it?
And the ultimate irony is literally in the room next door to where we are recording right now is every single senior executive of Golf Australia making the decision on this very issue.
Yeah. I was going to say, Mark, you know, you've solved a lot of golf's world problems on this podcast over the last year or so. So maybe you need to duck your head in there and have a bit of a chat and say a couple of things.
I might see if anyone wants a cappuccino and just poke in there and see what's going on. I tell you what I'll do. I'm going to change my top five. You look after yourself up there at Bonnie Doon.
All right.
On the 10th tee, I'm going to give you my top five Australian Open venues. That's coming up.
All righty.
Beauty.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mark, you are all across Watch My Numbers. You are all over this like a rash. It does look pretty impressive.
Look, one of the things I missed from my career that Nick enjoyed was having stats available. I never got it, except, of course, for Sand Saves, where I was number one. But I never got the look at how close I was hitting the five irons, where my miss was with my driver. I never got it. And it was always just in my head. I didn't actually know the facts. And with Watch My Numbers, it's no longer a feel thing. It is a factual guide to what you are doing in the game. And Nick, you knew how powerful that was playing in the US Tour.
Yeah, we had what was called ShotLink over there, but I wish I'd have had this sort of an app for myself, because weirdly, I was very much a feel player and I kind of stayed away from the statistics. But looking back, if I'd have had this, who knows?
So it's got the pro level, it's got the elite level, it's got the low handicapper, the high handicapper. It covers everybody, and your stats will be assessed at your level, and you'll be pushed into the right direction because of the Watch My Numbers app. It's a beauty, folks, and I highly, highly recommend it.
Now, I was on it the other day, and subscribers get extra bonus content, including videos from you, Mark, doing some stuff as well.
Why are you laughing, Ben? Why are you laughing?
Hey, by the way, do you do it during or the round or after?
Either way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can do it right there and then, or you finish your round and you put your own data in. So
nice.
You might have had a 150-meter 7-iron on the third hole at Metropolitan Golf Club. Put where you hit it from, you mark where it went to, and then you've got the real-time data at your fingertips anytime you want from that point forward.
Watch My Numbers helps you master your game and play smarter by using data.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in, because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips, because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know, that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Thanks to Ping, they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet, who search the globe for golf's best deals. This is Talk Birdie to Me. Now back to Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen.
Hey, Mark, did you see the April Fool's joke by Cam Smith?
No. What is it?
No?
Let me guess. He's gone to a mallet putter.
No, it wouldn't be that, because he doesn't need one like Scotty, as we know. But no, he came out and gave it the big team for announcement. The mullet is gone. So not the mallet, but the mullet.
Hey, did he put a picture
and
up?
A lot of people fell for it.
He put a picture up, did he?
There was a picture with him, nice shaved, clean back and sides. Obviously had the AI in there doing their work. I can't stand the mullet. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I have to admit, I reposted it on the socials.
Did you?
I did fall for it, and it was pointed out by a couple of pod listeners, and I thought, oh, but you got to copy medicine.
Yeah. I just wish he'd just tone it down. I don't mind the mullet. Just I'd prefer if he just toned
it
down.
Terrible.
Just a little bit. Anyway, that's just me. Play the opener, please. Top five. Okay, my top five Australian Open venues, if you want a serious event. For either men or women.
Oh.
Because this is my Australian Open. Okay? I think it's a big enough tournament to where it can stand on, both of them can stand on their own 2 feet. At number five, what Victoria did last year was quite incredible. The players left Victoria Golf Club in unison, saying this is one of the best golf courses in the world. Michael Cocking's done the redo there, and it is sensational. The green's absolutely perfect. And that is my number five. Number four, I am a believer that you move it around this great country. And I'm astounded they don't still do this. I know that Lake Carronup's had an Australian Open, Royal Hobart's had an Australian Open. We know that we've had Australian Opens at Cooyonga as well, which I played last week, and Cooyonga is looking magnificent, by the way.
Beautiful.
But my number four Australian Open venue is Royal Adelaide. Remember the one that Greg Chalmers won and Nick Faldo was there? It was a great week. The course was set up incredibly difficult. Did you play that one, Nick?
I did. I think the cut was 11 over par.
Yeah.
And I made the cut on the number, shot one under on the Saturday and went from about 58th to 5th. It was so hard.
It was ridiculous. So hard. It was ridiculous. Number three is Kingston Heath. I didn't put that at number two because I believe that it should be moved around the country, like I said. Number two, the Aussie. The Australian golf course is just made for the Australian Open. It's tough. It's big. It's always in good condition. It looks magnificent on the TV. The New South Wales government, every year it's there. It's just a free ad, just showing off Sydney and the Harbour Bridge and everything else. It is a no-brainer to get the Australian Open played at the Australian as often as possible. And at number one, it's just like exactly like the Open Championship and also the US Open Championship. The Australian Open should go back to Royal Melbourne in a perfect world, every 5 years.
Yeah.
It's really simple. The composite course should be shown off every 5 years and everything that goes with coming to the sand belt and coming to Australia. And, you know, when it is played in Australia, don't just show off the sand belt. You know, when it comes to Royal Melbourne, show off Sydney as well. I mean, people want to come down and get the full Australian golf experience. And that's why the governments should get involved and should sponsor the Australian Open, because it is a postcard to the rest of the world of what the golf world up there in the Northern Hemisphere is missing. And that's why, by the way, the New South Wales government, the Victorian government, the West Australian government, they all want the Australian Open because it's just a window into their cities, and it's magnificent. Anyway,
yep.
Hopefully in the Peter Thompson room next door, they're making little notes. Hopefully they're listening in and making some notes, because that would make the world really happy that both Australian Opens go back to a single event showing off the best golf courses that we have in this country and cities.
Yeah, it certainly would. Hey, by the way, what was your number three? I think I must have missed that one.
Kingston Heath. I just brushed over it.
I didn't. Oh, you did. Yeah, just glossed.
I just glossed
over one of the greatest courses, you know, in Australia and the world.
Yes, I apologise. It's my home course as well, so I apologise.
We had Mike Cocking on a little while ago,
yeah,
and he was talking about, we've looked at Huntingdale.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he said. When's Huntingdale open?
I think it was going to take 18 months.
Oh, okay, so yeah. A fair way off.
Yeah, a fair way off. I drove past it the other day. Yeah, they are in full swing down there at Huntingdale.
So could that be a potential venue a couple of years down the track, maybe?
Well, you know what? It could be a potential venue for the mixed tournament at Metropolitan and Huntingdale, which they are side by side. So that would make sense to me if that could happen, because, you know, Metropolitan have hosted Australian Opens, many of them, and of course the Huntingdale Golf Club has hosted many Australian Masters, I think 30 of them. So that would be a nice little mix if they ever decide, or if they keep on going with what they're doing at the moment. The Victorian government comes on board with more than $3 million, according to my source. Anyway.
All right, in global results for this week, we had on the PGA Tour the Houston Open, where Stephen Jaeger took down the world number one Scotty Scheffler. I must admit, it looked as though no one really wanted to win on that back nine. As it turned out, I think Jaeger made 9 straight pars.
Yeah.
One player who I really enjoyed watching was he's Argentinian, Alejandro Tosti. Fascinating little kind of a shorter guy, but he hits the ball a mile, and he was tied for the lead playing 18, but made the bogey. Thomas Dietrich, he had several chances to catch the leaders, but never did. And then obviously Scotty Scheffler, that putt on 18, missed out for the playoff. But congratulations to German-born Stephen Jaeger. He's been a bit of a grinder, and it's his first win in, I think, 135 starts on the PGA Tour. So well done. And as I mentioned earlier, Scotty Scheffler, his streak of 28 rounds of under par came to an end. But, Mark, he's on a new streak now.
What is it?
Rounds of par or better, because he actually shot par on that Friday. And you know who holds the record? Tiger Woods at 52, and right now Scotty Scheffler's at 30 rounds of par or better. So he's chasing down a new streak. They come up with all these stats over there. I love it.
How about the way he shot par? How about that? I mean, just the careless three-putt that you see our Weekend Warriors do every single time you play with them. They just, you know, they miss a three-footer and they go around quickly just trying, you know, they might be stepping across somebody's line and tap it back, and and before they know it, they're tapping in the third putt.
I know, and that one footer that he missed, well, I guess, you know, he finished one shot of the lead. So you got to treat every shot, you know, every shot with the same importance, whether it's a one footer or a 300-yard drive. But anyway, I'm sure he's just doing fine and he'll learn from it. Best of the Aussies at the tournament was Cameron Davis, who finished tied for 21st. The LPGA Tour, they were at the Ford Championship in Phoenix, Arizona. As I mentioned, the weekend, the weather kind of got nasty on that Saturday with a lot of wind when Hannah Green was right up there. But and they got the rain on the Sunday, so very, very rare. But Nelly caught her, total control. She even laid up on the short par 4 16th. I think that showed me how much of control she's in, because it was one of those holes, a reachable par 4 earlier in the week, but not reachable on this day. But she really laid back to the wedge with an amazing shot. And on the same hole, Lacey Thompson, who was trying to chase her down, took driver, having a bit of a crack, knocked it in the water, and that was basically game over for her. So fascinating to watch how much in control Nelly is from tee to green. Very similar demeanour to Scottie Scheffler as well. So they are certainly the two best players in the world right now. But it was a huge week, as I mentioned earlier, for Perth's own Hira Navid, that runner-up. Pretty much secures her card, so well done to her. And then best of the rest of the Aussies was Gabby Ruffles, had another good week, tied for 13th.
Good.
And Hannah Green, who was leading, ended up finishing tied for 21st.
Oh, what a shame.
On the DP World Tour, they were in India, in New Delhi, playing the Hero Indian Open. Did you see the bunkers there, Mark?
Yes, I did. Unusual.
Out of control, yeah. Those massive revetted faces and some of the deepest bunkers you'll ever see. But they had the second Japanese winner this season. Rikuya Hoshino won earlier in the year when he won in Qatar, but Keita Nakajima had a four-shot win over three other players, and he becomes the fifth Japanese player in history to win on the DP World Tour, so well done to him. Unfortunately, all the Aussies that were playing, there was quite a few, they all missed the cut, so not a great week for the Aussies there.
That doesn't happen too often, does it, when we've got a handful of Aussies playing and they all missed the cut?
It was a tough week for all the Australasians, unfortunately. Over on the Champions Tour in the US, they're at the Gallery Classic in California, and Steve Auker, isn't he always up there? It's unbelievable, this guy, but
he's a freak.
He did have a bit of a struggling finish. He finished bogey-bogey to lose by Walter Retief Goosen, who also struggled at his finish. They were both tied coming up the last, the par 5, I watched this, and reachable par 5, and both of them knocked it in the water. Oh. And Goosen ended up getting up and down for the par. Auker didn't. He made a bogey, and he won by... So Retief won by one from Steve Auker, Ricardo Gonzalez, and Alex Checker. Great news also for our own Greg Chalmers. He had another top 10, so that means he doesn't have to qualify for next week's tournament. So well done to Snake. An excellent result there. Best of the other Aussies was Mark Hensby and your cousin Alan, Steve Allen, tied for 26th. So... solid weeks there. And just a shout-out also to Retief Goosen. Makes a good quality wine, that guy. Really, really nice. Great Pinots and Shiraz.
Right?
So anyway, if you like your wines, as we do, maybe we should might have to sample one on the show at some stage, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Locally, here in Australia, the WPGA were playing the Women's New South Wales Open at Magenta Shores on the New South Wales Central Coast. It was quite the showdown between Colombian Mariajo Uribe, I think that's how you say it, and she was going back and forth with the UK's Bronte Law. Now, Uribe, she came down to Australia to play a couple of events because she wants to qualify for the Olympic team, the Colombian Olympic team. So it took a big risk coming down here to play, but as the commentator, I think it was Sam Hargraves who was doing the commentary, he said, Uribe fought the law and she won. I think that was the closing comment nice. when she won the golf tournament. So very, very well done there by Sam on that call, I thought. Justice Bozio, she was leading for a little bit, the Aussie amateur. Momoka Kabori, Kazuma's brother, finished tied for 8th, and best of the other Aussies was Jordan O'Brien and Kirsten Rudgley, finishing tied for 16th. It was a very international field down there for the New South Wales Open, so congratulations to Uribe on her win there. And I just want to mention of some events coming up this week, because obviously we've got the Masters in a couple of weeks, but this week's the final tune-up for the men on the PGA Tour. It's the Valero Texas Open. Live Golf are back at Live Miami down in Trump Doral, where Cam Smith, yes, still does have his mullet. He won't be using a mallet, but he has his mullet. The LPGA can really do four in a row. Can't wait to see if she can win the match play there at Shadow Creek in Las Vegas. Locally here in Australia, we have first stage of the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia Q School down at Moonah Links. So good luck to everyone going to first stage. That's going to be a big week for a lot of young golfers. And then also this week, Mark, you mentioned Augusta earlier. We've got the Anwar on, the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
That's right.
And we've got one Australian playing, Perth's own Madison Hinson-Tolchard, who goes to Oklahoma State over there in the US. She's going to be teeing it up, and maybe she can – I don't know what you get for that one. You don't get a green jacket, but you must get something nice from the men at the Masters.
Now, I do know. I know what it is. It's
– know what it is?
Is it a medal? I've got a feeling in the back of my mind I've seen a medal. I'll find out. That's my homework for next week. Apologies. I'll find out.
A bit of homework for you.
I've got a feeling it is a medal. And by the way, the match play at Shadow Creek. Shadow Creek is kind of a course that I really want to see at some stage. Have you ever played it, Nick?
I've never played it, but I think it's just behind. No, it's not behind the Wynn Resort, but we stayed at Wynn, and I think you can see it there. But, you know, obviously very man-made, in the middle of the desert, green and water features and fountains. It actually looks really spectacular. I'd love to go there one day and have a game.
It's a great tournament to watch, that's for sure. We wouldn't have had any feedback this week, would we?
Oh, we've had Dan? Lots of feedback.
Did we?
Lots of feedback. are you ready to answer some questions?
Only if they're nice.
We will find out. Now, we had a question last week about a guy. It was a guy from Sydney, from memory, who wanted to know about whether he could have caddying as a career and how he got into it. Nick, you've done some homework on that, and we're going to talk in more detail about that next week with your contact, correct?
That is correct, yeah. I reached out to Simon Clark, who's a well-known caddy here in Australia and overseas for many years, but he's told me about something that he's written up as a bit of an elite sort of caddy program which he's looking to implement. But right now he's actually off to Augusta because he's going to go caddy for Jasper Stubbs at the tournament. So I think we should get him on and have a good chat with him about everything.
Can I tell you something about Simon Clark? Because he went on to be a very good caddy. He caddied for me for 1 week and I sacked him.
Oh.
I hope he's still talking to me. It was very early days. It was early days.
Whose fault was it? Was it yours or his?
I don't think I played very well that week.
Can you remember what the sackable offence was?
Just me not playing well. I think that was it. I was in a bad mood.
And you blamed him?
I did.
Yeah, okay.
Because, Dan, in golf, in terms of that pro level, there are various sackable offences. So we can get into that when we talk to Simon, I think.
Yeah, that's a very good subject to discuss with him. Okay, some more feedback here. This one from Era Golf, which is a company, not a person. Hey, guys, love the show. Listen every week. I want to pick up something, Nick, you said in your top five best hats. I don't think Chi-Chi was the first or the most famous to wear the coconut straw fedora hat. I think that mantle should be held by the great Sam Snead. You have to know your history, Nick. Enjoy the pod, lads. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I can take that one on the chin for sure. Yeah, Sammy Snead was probably the first. I just happened to remember Chi-Chi.
I'm going to stick up for you, Nick. I reckon he had a more Cuban-style straw hat, where Sam Snead had an American-style straw hat.
You're backing me up, Mark. Thank you. Appreciate it.
No worries.
Sean McManam also had some feedback on the hats. Rory Sabatini and Tom Kite had some shockers.
Disgraceful. They should both hang their heads in shame for what they were putting on their head.
Yeah.
They should. It was pathetic.
Could they be retrospective honourable mentions?
Wasn't great there from Rory, that's for sure. I think Tom Kite had something similar to the Panama hat, I believe. And speaking of hats, Mark, I see you got the Tara Eady one on this week. Well done. Yeah. You're just going to continue that tradition. I like it.
Yeah, well, I got this rugby top from Trish for my birthday a couple of weeks ago, and it matches very nicely. So
thank
you.
Yeah, very similar. Great.
Beautiful.
Just to wrap up on the GOAT conversation from last week, BJ Boogie wrote in and he said, it's got to be Jack. I can't believe anyone would suggest anything different. Tiger's stated mission was to catch Jack and he could not do it.
Yeah, he couldn't do it when there were five times as many good players.
Yep.
Well, pretty simple.
It's an opinion.
Yep. Just mathematics.
It's an opinion.
Okay.
A lot of feedback on our bonus pod last week with Peter Fowler. Brett Brown wrote in, I played in a senior pro-am with Chucky, and the way he penetrated the wind was incredible to watch. Great guy, and he really helped my brother improve his game with some wonderful tips.
Fantastic. Yeah, Chucky's the man. He really helps a lot of people when he's on the golf course because he's always searching and analysing. And, you know, I've seen him at driving ranges call people over who aren't even pros to come and have a look at his golf swing and tell them what they think or ask them what they think. It's fascinating. He loves the game and he's always looking for new ideas.
Die Sports wrote in and said, I wish I'd listened to this before recently experiencing Cooch Grass and Sandbelt Bunkers. I'd like to see the grind on his sand wedge as well, and I'd love to watch him play the new Furrow short course.
Yeah, that'd be good fun. If you want to look for the grind, go and have a look at the S grind of the Vokey wedges and the back part that's ground off the bottom sole. It's a little bit sharper. So it's similar to that. There's still quite a bit of bounce, but it's a skinny sole.
Chris wrote in, great interview. I love the part about how Chucky practiced. That was exactly what I wanted to hear. Priceless stuff. That was a masterclass.
Yeah, very good. I'm still shocked. You know, like I said, I get the heebie-jeebies off the Cooch Grass these days still, and I've gone to chipping with the heel in the air, which I, you know, we mentioned that. Yeah. I was really concerned that I was kind of jibbing it. You know, I was taking the easy way out. But now I'm so happy that he actually chipped that way. His entire career, he chipped with the heel in the air. I mean, I just couldn't get over that. I never noticed it when I played with him. And I played with him so many times.
If you haven't heard the podcast, by the way, go back and listen to it. It's fantastic. Peter wrote in, a really good guy in a pro-am. Love the podcast. P.S. Marco, excellent commentator. You often relate to what the pro is doing back to what the normal golfer can or should do.
Good on you. I try and do that. So thanks for the feedback. I appreciate it. And Nick O'Hearn also does that sort of stuff. And it's always great to work with him.
Sid Thornton has written. Now, Sid was quite polite. He wasn't rude. But he said, I reckon it's a bit over the top calling Peter Fowler a legend. Now, I disagree with Sid, but I thought we'd read it out because I want to put it to you, Mark, and to you, Nick. I want you to tell us why he's a legend.
Yeah, I'll go first. No, well, he's a legend of Australian golf, and he's a legend fella, and he's a multiple Australian winner, as well as being a legend on the Tropo Tour. He's not legendary worldwide, but his short game is legendary worldwide. So that's why we called him a legend.
Yeah, spot on there. He's an absolute legend of a bloke, but as you said at the end there, legendary short game. And when you have Seve Ballesteros asking you how you hit shots, I think you go down in the legend status
yes,
for sure.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Yep, nice. Robert has a question here. Nick, if you think there should be a rule against having a line on your ball, then equally long putters should be banned. Both are against the spirit of the game. More a statement than a question.
Well, I was going to say, is there a question there? But no. I've spoken about this a little bit before with the long putter, you know, and the anchoring when people may or may not be anchoring. I've always said, look, the easiest way to solve this issue is just make the putter the shortest club in the bag and then use it however you want. I'm using a short putter these days. I used a long one throughout my career mainly because I was allowed to. And I think the players now, if you look at Will Zalatoris, I think his game's improved, or his putting's improved anyway since he's gone to the long putter. But just to get rid of all all the issues that we see with players and how they're using the broomstick, easiest way to solve this problem is make it the short club in the bag and use it however you want. Use it as a pull cue if you want.
Use it as a pull cue. I never thought I'd hear you say that. Anyway.
Now, you mentioned, Nick, a moment ago that Mark is wearing his Tara Eti hat. We had a couple of more comments here on New Zealand. Geert wrote in. Now, Geert's written a couple of times recently, but he's written in this week, which is a really good thing because he's answering a question we had last week about the logo on the cap.
Oh, good. It's not a seagull?
No, it's not a seagull. The bird in the logo is the Tara Eti bird, the fairy tern. There's only about 40 left in the wild. Tara Eti supports the charitable trust, which is saving those birds from extinction.
So what's it called again?
Wow.
It's called the fairy tern.
So the fairy tern was in danger of going the way of the dodo.
But maybe still is. There's only 40 left in the wild, according to Geert.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I reckon these people, the billionaires, they're not going to see their bird go down.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No way.
Andrew Huntley wrote in, love the talk on Tara Eady and some other great Kiwi courses. One that doesn't get a mention is Wairaki, which is not a coastal links course. It's in the middle of the North Island near Taupo.
Ooh.
Good golf course and a great wildlife sanctuary with wonderful scenery. Do you guys know that course or not?
No, don't know that one. I know Titirangi.
I've heard of Wairaki, but I've never been there, never played it. So, but I have heard good things in the past. Certainly one to put on the list.
If you do go to Wairaki, it's in Taupo, which is beautiful. It's a gorgeous little town. What you have to do is go to the Hooker Falls, which is on the entrance to Taupo, and it's the most beautiful falls you'll ever see in your life.
We should take New Zealand over, you know. All right. Just make it a state. I don't know why we didn't take over when we had the chance.
Now, final comment here that I'll give you guys. This is from Cameron Stewart. Cameron has written in, g'day, gents. Thanks for the great show and the helpful tips. I wanted to give a shout-out to a couple of mates. Big Wayne, who hit a hole-in-one during competition a few weeks ago at Woodend nice. Golf Course. And Glenn, my mate, who got his first hole-in-one last Wednesday.
Holy dolly.
Great efforts from both. And I was wondering, what would be your top five aces?
The best hole-in-ones I've seen. I'm going to put Shane Warne at the top of that list. You get to play Augusta and you make a hole-in-one at 16 as just your first go-around. Ridiculous. I reckon that's pretty hard to beat. If you had a hole-in-one on the island hole,
wow,
that would be up there. If you had a hole-in-one on the 16th at Cyprus.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, give us another one.
Is that an albatross?
Well, it's an albatross for members, but for tournament, if they ever play a tournament there, they play it as a par three for pros.
I think seven at Pebbles is a good one down the hill. That's an iconic hole.
Yeah, there's a ripper as well. We've got the top four. Go, give me one. I'm going to, well, we'll give, because we have an Australian lean here at Talk Birdie to me. I'm going to say, is it the sixth at New South Wales Golf Club? That's a pretty good one. They have one. That's a
ripping
hole.
That's right. Beautiful.
What about the seventh on the old course down at Cape Shank?
Oh, yeah,
the National. That's a beauty.
That would be a ripper too, yep.
I almost had one out there the other day, actually. A little 7-iron knocked down into the breeze and just flirted with the hole. Didn't go in, but no, it was close.
Yeah, wow. That would have been nice.
Anyway, that's the feedback. So we're going to come back to that caddy conversation next week, Nick. I think that'll be really interesting. And I will. We will put it to him about how you sacked him, Mark, and what his recollection is compared to yours.
Well, I hope he still wants to talk. I do like Simon, and I'll tell you what, he's done so well out of the Yardage books.
Don't try and crawl up his ass now.
He's a lovely, lovely person with a beautiful family.
Damage is done. Damage is done.
It's time for this week's Masterclass.
Yes, thanks, Mark. The Masterclass this week is a little bit of a different one. It's probably, I would say, a more advanced Masterclass, and it's called the One Hopper, the One Hopping Chip Shot, which I don't know if you watched the Houston, I saw a couple of great examples of it on the final nine with Scotty Scheffler hit a beautiful one. Taylor Moore did it on the final hole as well. Hit a beautiful little one hopper. But they played it two different ways, and there is a couple of different ways you can play the shots. Scheffler, and the way I tend to play it, is to come into the ball very, very steep, because the one hopper, what you're trying to do is you're trying to land it into an upslope, have it take one bounce, land on the green, spin, and then release. Now, Scheffler, the way he played it and the way I play it, is you need to have a lot of speed coming into the ball, so you tend to come down a sharper, a bit more of a steeper angled attack. It's a high-risk shot, but it's a shot that will get you the ball close to the hole as possible on very difficult chip shots. Now, the easy way out would be to hit a little bump and run with a hybrid or a three-wood, or maybe throw it all the way onto the green, but you're probably going to go 10 or 15, 20 feet past. But if you want to get it stopping close on those very difficult chip shots, you got to take the risk, take the gamble, pick a spot where you want it to land into the upslope. It takes one hop, checks on the green, and hopefully settles somewhere near the flag. I'm going to put a little video on socials as to how to play it, a couple of different variations, but it's a great little shot to put in your tool bag if you have the confidence with it. Now, for the higher handicappers, I probably wouldn't recommend it. You fancy your chipping, this would be a great shot to put in the repertoire.
I'm glad you said that, Nick, because it is a high-risk shot. And what, in your masterclass, can you do me a favour? Can you hit the 9-iron kind of just bump it along the ground sort of shot versus it? Because
I'll do that.
You can't predict a bounce. You can't predict the bounce, but when you get the ball to spin and it skids, you can predict a skid, what it's going to do. And that's why you take the risk, to get the ball to skid in the first one instead of just to bounce up a hill with, you know, when anything can happen to the bounce.
Yeah, one thing you got to be careful with is if you're chipping up into grain, that's where it's a very difficult shot to try and guess the bounce. So the grain can't be too heavily into you with the grass that's off the green. Make sure it's sort of neutral, or if anything, maybe a little downgrain. That makes it a little bit easier. It's actually a good shot to hit when the ground's wet as well, because then it will skid on you a bit more. So that's sort of a nice little option.
Well, magnificent masterclass. If you can master that shot around the greens, particularly here in Australia, The Aussie One Hopper is an absolute beauty. Nick, I've got some homework to do. I'll get that done. I'll find out what the girls are doing. I've got some homework for you as well, if you don't mind. Can you just fix that Wi-Fi up there at Bonnie Doon, please?
It's not Bonnie Doon. It's up near Ilden. But yes, we will fix it for sure.
Now, while Nick was doing his masterclass, I've been looking at the door here because it's glass on the bottom half.
Anyone
I have not
past?
Seen a stream of legs. That means the big high-level meeting next door is still going on. To confirm your rumour about the Open.
Can you know, in the old sitcoms, you could put a glass next to the wall and you could actually hear what was being said. Can you just pass me a glass and I'll pop over there and I'll see what I can find out. See you guys.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Thanks for being part of Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. And if you want to be part of the show, drop us a message or comment on the socials. Or you can send an email or leave a voicemail at talkbirdietome.com.au. Thanks to the great team at Ping, they're the best in the business and they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. If you're after top quality at prices you won't beat, check them out. golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.